Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, Jaws turns 50. So we're going to discuss the evolution of the summer blockbuster. So let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, Trey Heinrichs.
What's up? We're going to need a bigger boat.
John Davenport.
Hi.
And yeah, we're going to talk about Jaws turning 50 and summer blockbusters. By the way, fun update. We're going to be off officially for 2 weeks. We're actually taking a little hocation.
Does it have to be a hocation? Can it just be a regular vacation?
It can be a vacation.
Better than a vocation.
I mean, we all have vocations.
No, that's just a job, Troy. That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah.
Just got that dad joke bag across the room, and he's like, get to it.
You know where they keep all the dad jokes?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. What are you doing for your vocation, Aaron?
Hang on. I want to hear the answer to this riddle. What? Where did it? Where?
They keep them in the database.
Fuck. I'm going to jump off a bridge. I am.
I hate you so much.
The Lost Boys bridge, though, so I'll be fine.
There you go. You'll fly afterwards.
I will. I'm just not podcasting, John. That's all I'm doing.
That's all?
Taking time off. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I have a lot of work stuff, personal work stuff I have to take care of.
It's called vacation.
Yeah, well, there's that. Although I am meeting up with Brian Williams.
Oh, see? That's a vacation in itself. Get together and, like, towns get burned down.
That's the plan. That is the plan. You guys do anything? You go anywhere? Over the holidays, July 4th and all that?
Nope. I am on vacation, but I am doing a staycation.
That's kind of the best kind.
Yeah.
What's the verdict? Go somewhere or stay at home? What do you really secretly think is the best vacation? Don't do state of mind. That's an easy out. What, like, all 51% of the time, this is the best option for you.
Oh, go somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you said this once, and I'm finally on board with this, which is it should be about experience, right? We should be going out and having experiences. That's what life is all about. And I'm really leaning towards that. That's what vacation should be. Staycation's great every now and again, but, like, if you're going to do a vacation, go have an experience. Go live your life. Go breathe some fresh air. That, I think that's where my mind's going with it.
That's where I am. Always. Go.
Yeah.
Go. See stuff you've never seen before, experience something you've never experienced before. Try not to get arrested. Don't get caught. Bring friends that'll hide the bodies.
That's the important part. Bring friends that'll hide the bodies. Because otherwise, like, what's the point?
Yeah, I don't want to go to jail in a different land.
Yeah.
Things are sketchy right now. I don't know. Everywhere you go, things are boom. I don't know what's happening. I don't want to be part of it. I just want to be safe. Nice and safe. Maybe I'll just stay home. Times are crazy. You know what's crazy, is that Jaws is turning 50, which, if you weren't aware, which you should be, is basically the creation of the summer blockbuster. Like, that's the first movie that really brought it into executives' eyes that, oh, wait, there's a lot of kids off in the summer. There's a lot of families that are doing things in the summer. We got to fill some of their time. We got to make some money off this. And they started realizing that the summer season, bam. This could be a lucrative thing, and it has become the most lucrative aspect of film going year-wide. But before we get into, like, the whole blockbuster conversation, I'm kind of curious if you remember the first time you saw Jaws. And if you don't know what Jaws is, here, I'm going to tell you what it's about. Shark eat people. There you go. And Steven Spielberg's, I still say, best movie.
I'm really glad you told me that Jaws is shark eats people. I was a little bit worried. I watched the wrong movie.
No, you just watched, like, a Bond villain coming of age story.
Yeah, like, that's what I thought we were talking about. Now I gotta go redo everything. Although he was one of the coolest Bond villains, wasn't he?
Yeah, all that research I'm sure you did 5 minutes before we started.
That's not fair.
What did you see, or where did you see Jaws first? Where do you remember? Were you a kid? TV? What?
I know that I watched it at home. It was on one of the Betamax tapes, and we watched it probably for giggles every other weekend or something, because that's what kids do.
Giggles?
Yeah.
I don't think you watched the right movie.
No, I watched the right movie. I know which one
it is. Nobody was laughing at Jaws when it came out. You're drunk.
I probably was drunk.
As a 6-year-old. What about you, Troy? Do you remember where you first saw Jaws?
Oh, definitely VHS.
At home.
I was not born yet when this came out.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, they've re-released it multiple times. I saw it in a theater and I might have just been born, but I'm just saying I still saw it in a theater many, many years later. It was in the 80s that I saw it in a theater.
I don't think I ever had the opportunity to see it in a theater if I was paying attention, so I never really did. But like, so it would have been somewhere in the 80s. I would have been actually still in Panama when I saw it for the first time. And it would have either been like on, like when I went to my grandmother's house and saw it on HBO, or it was on somebody's Betamax tape. So that's where I would have saw it.
Did it affect either one of you in terms of going into the water? It didn't me. I couldn't go into the ocean for like 14 years. I was a teenager when I finally went in the ocean.
Yeah, when I went to the ocean. Not like the lake, because like we had ponds and lakes and stuff in the Midwest.
You weren't like one of those kids who are like, it's all the same. Sharks live in the lakes. You weren't one of those? Okay.
I was not one of those. I was fine in the lake.
Like, I was. I'm not knocking them. I was like, I don't know what's under there.
When I went to the Atlantic for the very first time, I was like, ain't going in there. No way in hell.
For me, it wasn't that big of a deal. I've seen sharks in the water when I was a kid already. So I wasn't really that, didn't really hit me that much that they hurt people or whatever. I'm going to go out and have a good time in these awesome waves and boogie board and do all the other stuff, or I'm going to be afraid. And I chose to go out and have fun.
It's probably different if you grow up on a beach land, right? Like you're always surrounded by ocean water. So yeah, I assume you grew up just not really being that afraid of it.
Yeah, no, I was never really afraid of ocean water. It wasn't until I got older where things like that started to scare me. But like, I remember there's a very distinct memory that I have when we would go to the beaches in the interior of Panama, and we would go to my uncle's beach house, and we'd come down the long staircase to go to the beach, cross over the black volcanic sand, which will practically melt your feet off, and then finally get to the beach. And then there'd be like three or four sharks washed up onto the shore. And as a kid, 6, 7, 8 years old, they were massive. And I'm still like, all right, time to go boogie board. And you're not taking that away from me.
Because you figure, well, they're all dead now.
Like, yeah,
this is only three that are in the area.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember being distinctly terrified. This is a movie that really haunted me when I was a kid. And I wish it wasn't so. I watched Evil Dead. That scared me. But Jaws kind of, because it was real. Because it's real. You know, Evil Dead, I don't believe in any of that stuff. So that doesn't, it scares me in a movie way. Jaws scared me in a real world way. Because now, to this day, I never get into an ocean without that movie coming to mind. And throughout your life, I mean, how many times do you hear the theme song? How many people mess with you whenever you do get in the water about what's underneath? You know, your whole life, people are cautioning you to be careful while you're in there, as if you have much you can do about it, because of shark hungry, shark eat. That's just kind of how it works. That should be a t-shirt. Shark hungry, shark eat.
I'll get on that.
Appreciate it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just one of those things that I think really kind of...
Well, the music's stuck iconic. With me.
Oh, it's one of the best themes of all time.
Anytime you're in a pool and someone's sitting on a floaty raft or something, you're always doing the da-da-da-da, and you're like hitting them from underneath and knocking them off.
Seriously, a few years ago, I had, you know, I've talked about it before, but had like an outdoor screening of Jaws on my fence. It's nothing fancy. Don't think I'm, you know, going crazy. Oh,
don't let him fool you guys. White He's fence. Actually like got his own movie projector screen that he parks out in his backyard.
No, it's a white fence, and I project
it. He's trying to play fence. It down.
Hey, for his area, it's pretty damn fancy. Yeah. Right.
Right. While we sat in a dog pool and just watched the movie and just terrified.
But sat in a dog pool. He said.
Got the lawn chair sitting inside the kiddie pool filled with ice.
You gotta do what you gotta do with finances. You know what I'm saying? Make that thing real.
He's just got a hose spraying on them.
But it was a good time. It was really, really a good time. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. And I think every year that goes on, what it has really kind of cracked me up about that film is how well it holds up. I watch it every year at some point. Like, not necessarily in summer, but I definitely watch Jaws every single year. It's one of the few movies that I always watch. And I can tell you, it still holds up. Every time I watch it, it still has the same value as the first time I watched it. I just think it's a perfect movie. Of $10 of full price of admission, that one's a 10 across the board. I can't think of a way to improve it, which is funny, seeing most of the reasoning for why that movie turned out the way it is because of the busted ass shark. Great story if you've never seen it. There's plenty of documentaries on it. If you don't know the Jaws story, watch it. There's some fabulous documentaries on it. new one coming out.
Yeah, and that's one of those beautiful things about Happenstance. You know, the shark working the way they did, they were forced to shoot it in a completely different way that they were intending to. And then, you know, we get the beautiful movie we end up getting because of it.
Yeah, we're supposed to see the shark the whole time. And instead, we're seeing like its mouth on its side underwater, probably because four guys have to carry that giant head out there. You know, they didn't have CGI to fill in the gaps. So, I mean, you had to work with what you had. And old Bruce, his name was Bruce, it just sank more than did anything.
Well, and Spielberg himself, right? He was just floundering on that movie, you know, trying to keep his head above water because he was all over the place too, trying to get that, you know, just made.
We're both sitting here going, we see what you're doing, Troy. We see what you're doing.
For the love of Pete.
It's true, though. Spielberg was in over his head. He really was.
Stop it. I can't take you seriously anymore.
Yeah, I hate the fact that it's actually funny too. It makes me feel so dirty every single time.
Because this is what he'll do the whole goddamn night is he'll just try to find all these different above water references.
And it's going to work almost every single time until it stops.
So I was waiting around. You see what I did there?
That's funny.
Lord. All right, well, let's talk about blockbusters, because this was the movie that created summer blockbusters. Summer 1975, you know, Steven Spielberg, that busted-ass shark, and a crazy obsession with what swims underneath the water led to what became summer movie season. Again, it was the first time studios put their heads together and said, oh, kids, families, Memorial Day through Labor Day, which has now been extended to May 1st. Thanks, Marvel. That's the time we're going to rack up some money. So we're going to talk about the evolution of summer blockbusters, kind of what it all means. Now, it started with Jaws. Are you guys surprised that nobody tried to put this all together before 1975?
Summer blockbusters?
Yeah, the whole idea that summer movie season is where we can really capitalize because all these kids are off, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think you have to remember, too, what was going on like in the 60s. There you have, you know, Woodstock's going on. It was a music scene. It wasn't really a movie scene. And there was just a different dynamic. You get into the 70s and people are trying to look for escapism at that point. You talk about, you know, coming off the gas crisis, Cold War is starting up. You're looking for ways to not live in reality. Where in the 60s, people are excited to be out and about and doing the thing. So maybe movies weren't as popular for summer 60s folk versus what was happening in the 70s and 80s.
I suppose there wasn't the kind of money that there was. And obviously then it was really, you know, really took off a few years later with Star Wars. You know, that's really where it just kept going and going and going. And so there's a couple different aspects to it that I want to talk about. One is that if you didn't know this, summer blockbusters led to PG-13, right? Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Gremlins, they were considered so violent in 1984 that Steven Spielberg and others pushed to have another rating between PG and R so that they couldn't get so much flack for, well, I've got a PG movie. Why you got a guy ripping a guy's heart out? Why do you got all these little monsters eating people? And I think they were more terrifying when they were in the microwave, but whatever. And then we got, you know, PG-13. The first movie with that was delivered in 1985. So do you think by introducing this, like, how do you feel about this? Like this PG-13 being introduced, and do you feel like it kept edgy movies in the blockbuster conversation? Because if you really look at most of the movies that have popped in summers of the last 50 years or since that rating was introduced, last 40 years, they really are PG-13 mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah. R is very limited.
One, if you look at PG-13 back in the 80s versus PG-13 now, it's a completely different scale. I mean, somehow we've gotten more conservative with that rating than we did originally.
That's because, well, I think mindsets change, right? Things that bothered us then don't really bother us now. And you can drop the F-bomb, and you can have it twice if it's non-sexual. Yeah, I don't think you can have it sexual at all. Maybe it's once if it's sexual.
I was thinking that we actually have gotten more conservative with PG-13 than we were originally.
I don't think so. Okay, explain your rationale. I'm listening.
Well, my rationale is like, look at the PG-13 movies we had of yesteryear. I mean, there was a lot of things that were going on in those movies that were just like that today we'd be like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, and yet PG-13 now is very well regulated to the point where you have those rules about how many times you can say that certain things.
Give me an example. I can't think of anything that's more extreme in the 80s than now, or 70s, or well, maybe not 70s because they didn't have PG-13, but 90s, etc.
Well, look at movies like Weird Science and kind of think of trying to think of other movies in the, that same vein of like the teen high school movie that was like back then. That teen high school movie was kind of like almost raunchy comedies to a pretty extreme degree. But nowadays, those movies aren't made like that anymore.
I don't know if I agree with that sentiment, but I mean, you're entitled to your opinion. What about you, Trey? You think that's true? Do you think they're less extreme now? More? I would go the other way. I think we've been pushing the envelope more, personally.
Yeah, I mean,
you maybe look not at, sex-wise, but violence-wise, for sure.
Here's a great example. Like, you look at Roger Rabbit, right? So Roger Rabbit was PG, I think, when it originally came out. I think it's still technically PG, but really, like, Roger Rabbit should be a PG-13 movie for all the violence that's in it, even if it's cartoon violence.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know? So, like, and that was in 1988. So when you think about what Roger Rabbit does, then you look at, like, Top Gun Maverick, you know, recently, right? Top Gun Maverick should be a PG-13 movie for the type of material that it has and suggestiveness that could be in there, right? Versus a PG rating.
Oh, yeah, so there's some sexy just, time and stuff going on in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a matter of, I think that the line between PG, PG-13 is just a matter of how much violence and, you know, do you say fuck once or twice if it's not sexual?
Such a weird way that they do that. I don't know. That's an interesting conversation. But either way, PG-13 has afforded filmmakers the opportunity, right, to be able to expand their horizons, like keep to go as edgy as they can. Like they're going to see how close they can get to R, and then they'll cut a few things if they have to keep that PG-13, because that's where the money is. If they go to R, you know, you look at Ballerina, right? That just came out. If that was PG-13, I'm fully convinced that would have done much better. But because it's a hard R, you're not going to get as many younger kids to do it, to see it.
And the funny thing is that Top Gun originally is a PG movie, even though you have that whole, like, you know, take my breath away sequence.
Yeah, the first movie should have been PG-13 as well. That was in 86. Oh, yeah. That definitely should have been PG-13. Because the rating isn't applied intelligently. Joy, it's all opinion, and it's based on mood, and it's whoever you get on the board. There is no list of items that is written out and said, this is all like, well, basically if this happens, well, basically if that happens, and then you have to go back and forth, and it's just like, it's not like the law, right? It's not like you go to court and you have it written down and you have to follow these procedures or this happens. No, it's very loosely interpreted in many respects.
I don't think it deters or detracts one way or the other, though, from like whether you attend in the summer or not. You know, you have your PG movies that are designed for little.
Well, you've got kids out, though. You've got a lot more kids out. I think give that ability, you're going to get more kids in the theaters by themselves.
For sure. You're also going to get a bunch of the teenagers that are going to bring all their friends and they're going to talk about it and spread it at school. And, you know, and then they're going to come out and go see it all summer long, once or twice, three times, because it came out in May or early June before school let out, because school used to go to like mid-June. And not before Memorial Day.
Sure. I feel like you were trying to cover up because you realized that you said school and you're like, so you went back on that.
Some people have year-round school, not up here, but some people.
Yeah, that's true. They do. Now, speaking of ratings, so in the past 50 years of summer blockbusters, right, only a handful of rated R films have been the number one summer blockbuster. Kind of to add to my point, rated R movies they don't sell as many tickets. Now, granted, I will say they don't make as many of them anymore because they don't sell as many tickets, but still. So here you go. Here are the only R-rated movies to be number one of the last 50 years for the summer. For the summer, not the whole year, just the summer. The Omen, The Amityville Horror, Rambo First Blood Part 2, Beverly Hills Cop 2, I like that one. Terminator 2 was the last R-rated movie to be the number one summer hit in 1991. So why do you think people stop? Do you think people stop going to R-rated movies in mass, or is it just a matter of the studios just started making the ratings more user friendly, more family friendly?
Latter.
Yeah.
Easily the latter.
I'm going to agree with the latter also. I think that what ended up happening is that they saw the writing on the wall. How do we get more people in seats? How do we get more cheeks in the seats to get things going and have people watch movies? It's more about gentrifying the experience, creating something that's safer for more people to go see so that you can have the family, or you can have more larger segments of the family come in all at one time.
And like 90% of the R-rated stuff that was out there back in the day, you get with PG-13 now. Right. Like I said, I don't think John's right on the conservative side. I think it's probably more lax. We put up with a lot of stuff in PG-13. It pushes the envelope of what R could be.
I'm going to double down on the fact that it's a lot more lax back then than it is now. Because if you look at PG-13 back in the 80s, you had people's hearts getting ripped out. In Red Dawn, you had kids shooting people. That was shooting a people.
PG movie, by the way. But Temple of Doom wasn't PG-13 yet.
Red Dawn, you had people being shot in mass in the middle of the street, and you saw blood and everything going down. But then you look at PG-13 now, and gore is actually less and less in some of these movies. You have a lot more in modern PG movies, stylized off-screen deaths, stylized off-screen blood, one F-bomb versus casual use of profanity in the 80s. You have tame, vague sex scenes, mostly safe now, but back then it was innuendo and nudity. It was very risky. You know, that's the difference between both the 1980s PG-13 and the PG-13 today. Much more than just language, much more than just sexual content. You're looking at a lot of different things, that we are stylizing things much, much better these days to allow for some of that without it being overly grotesque.
All right. But that's why people went to the R-rated movies back in the day. It was because they knew that if I'm going to an R-rated movie versus a PG movie, that the R-rated movie is going to have like blood and gore and sex, and it's going to be awesome and, you know, what have you. And I got to get my mom's permission, so I'm going to sneak in when I'm 16 instead of 17. All that fun stuff that went with it. Now, when you look at an R-rated movie, it's pretty much like the sexy time and maybe body parts flying all over the place. But PG-13 has enough suggestive sex and enough death that it's, you know, as what an R-rated movie could have been back in the day.
Yeah, I will agree to a caveat, John. I'll meet you in the middle. I think sex has been dialed down. Violence has been dialed way up. It hasn't been dialed down at all. I don't think that's happened. But I definitely think sex has. Like, was it Airplane? You saw there was nudity right there. I mean, you used to have nudity in PG and PG-13 movies all the time. Now, never. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw it. And I also think audiences have kind of shied away from that to a large degree. I don't think they do much in terms of sex scenes in most movies these days, unless it's really relationship driven. It's about a relationship, about somebody dating. It's about something along those lines. And those aren't big blockbuster movies. Those aren't really films that really pop in terms of, unless you get a rom-com that really fires on all cylinders, which doesn't happen very often. Used to, not anymore. All right. So Troy, I'm going to speak to something up your alley. So animation surges in the summer, right? They always drop at least a few of them, and that's mostly because of the family aspect. You get your Pixars, your Disneys, your DreamWorks, whoever has an animation studio, they want to get one or two of these out in the summer. So every summer, there's a few animated films that capture audiences' attentions, right? So over the years, Toy Story, Lion King, Shrek, that list just keeps going. And their sequels and live-action remakes also dominate every summer. What I find fascinating about that is that I think most parents only go because their kids want to go, but then that's not really true, right? Because regular Joes love animated movies too.
I think it shifts. I think it, you know, you talk about, you know, up to 1995 when Pixar came onto the screen, it was really, oh, we're taking the kids to the cartoon movie, mm-hmm. right? And then Pixar and DreamWorks start hitting on all fours and all cylinders, whatever you want to call it.
Because they had that mix of speaking to children and adults at the same time.
They had the four quadrant thing going on. So like after you saw Toy Story, because you brought the kids to see Toy Story, because that was what your mentality was going in. And you're just like, holy brick, this movie just wrecked me. Right. So then when Monsters comes out and Dory comes out and Cars comes out, you're just like, I got to see what happens next. Because like Cars talk. That's cool. There's going to be a great story behind it. And so you get more adults wanting to go to those things. And that's why those things took off to make a bigger blockbuster hit, because you're not only getting the kids money, but you're getting the parents money, and they're bringing multiple friends and they're telling their friends and their kids are going, and word of mouth spreads pretty quickly on the animated front, or on the remade animated front in the case of How to Train Your Dragon.
Or Lilo and Stitch or any other one.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about those? Like, so many of those, you know, I used to think when that first started becoming a trend, I'm like, well, that's for people that never would have watched the animated movies, right? Like the live action remakes are for people that don't watch it. And people like me, I don't really go to animated movies that much. My kids are grown. I don't need to. So I think very much that's why for a time. But then the more and more that it has happened over the years. Whenever I talk to people that see it, they were huge fans of the animated ones. Now, some of that's nostalgia. They grew up with it. But a lot of it, like we've got recent ones, Lilo and Stitch is a prime example. That wasn't that long ago, you know, and it's a monster hit. So is it really, it's for the fans just as much as it is the non-fans, is it not?
I think originally it was because you had older movies, right? You're talking like Cinderella.
You're just trying to get the IP jazzed up.
Exactly. They didn't want to have what happened to Winnie the Pooh where it goes into like public domain and now there's a horror movie made.
Hey, don't knock those, man. Those are actually kind of funny.
They're actually really good.
Kind of fun.
But it's that purpose. It's like, what do I need to do with this IP in order to keep the IP locked to me for another period of time, number one. And number two, something like a Snow White or a Cinderella, it's been a long time since those movies have been out. So why not put something out there that is like maybe familiar to grandma and grandpa, maybe mom and dad, but like the kids have not seen this. So let's do a live action version because that's what kids are expecting today. You have Unreal Engine and everything they're playing in video games that looks so freaking lifelike as it is already. We can do animation in that scale. Let's go ahead and do it that way rather than doing cell shaded cartoon drawings. Mm. You know, I know Arjun's like dying in his chair right now because it's like his form of art, but if you could do a computer animated version of it and it looks good, then why not tell the story again? It's a great story. I thought the Jungle Book remake was great.
I did too. I've
Jon Favreau. You can't go wrong with Jon Favreau too much.
I like the Lion King live action remake too. I didn't like Mufasa, but I like the Lion King.
Yeah, it's like, how did you make hair and water move like that in an animated computer sense? Like, that was fascinating to me.
Fascinating. And the How to Train Your Dragon, I can't compare that to the animated one because I never saw it. But I can.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, I know. I'm glad you loved it, right? You loved it?
Yep. Fucking loved it. It was so good.
All right. Well, I didn't love it, but it was very good. And I got why people might love it. I don't really want to hear Jay Baruchel for 6 hours by watching those three movies. I think I'll be fine without that. Hey, guys. I just can't do it. I can't.
You couldn't even do a good Jay.
Nope. I don't want to. But anyway, it's amazing how much animation kind of, I wouldn't say dominates, but it definitely, there's a few movies that always capture the zeitgeist, so to speak. And what I find interesting, because Trey, you've actually pointed this out, there's always, typically, if they release a big family movie like that around Father's Day, it's a big hit. But why don't they do the same thing for Mother's Day? Any theories on that? You're the first one that pointed out the whole Father's Day thing, and how that's where every animated movie should
be. That's where Pixar's always been forever.
But with May being so like prominent, you'd think there'd be more Mother's Day ones, don't you?
I think Mother's Day, the issue is because it was never part of summer movie season because it started Memorial Day until Avengers came along and moved it to May 1st or April 30th in the case of one or two of those movies. So you could throw something on Mother's Day, but what do you put on Mother's Day?
Sure.
You know, I definitely do not want this to sound sexist in any way, shape or form.
Too late. If you gotta start that way, too late.
But when you're catering to the masses, right? The masses are still very stereotypical, and the masses are saying like, dads are gonna go take them to like Shrek, right? Dads want to go see Shrek. Moms don't potentially want to see Shrek. They want to see more stuff that relates to them, and it's like, so it's a different dynamic when you're trying to do the marketing for that.
So that's Troy at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Have fun, moms.
The two holidays have two different mentalities to it, right? Father's Day is about fathers spending time with their kids. Mother's Day is about kids getting the hell away from mom. So that's one of the things that makes it so much different.
Okay.
That's John at the Hollywood Outsider.
That's John at the Hollywood Outsider because that offends.
Oh, I am not wrong about
yes,
this.
Yes, you are 100%.
You were totally wrong.
100%.
My wife is all about my kids better be here. And I'm all like, please let me just have a day to myself.
Guys. Just so you know, John's the only one here that doesn't have kids, so he just doesn't understand.
I'm just paying attention to what my friends with kids all do.
You
whenever it's Mother's Day,
not listen
like
to
the
them.
Dads are like, oh, I'm taking the kids away from her for a little
maybe
while
so she can have some time people. To herself. Maybe they're bad parents. Do you ever think of
you
that?
You know what? Maybe they are, but that's what I know what Mother's Day looks like. As Mother's Day is, let's...
The truth, John, is that on either one of those days, the parents are like, I just want to be alone for one freaking day. This is when they're little and they're constantly around. But you don't, but you never leave. You really want to spend time with your kids. It's just something you say in your head to make yourself, just work yourself up. But really, you want to spend time with your kids on both days. Anyone that tells you otherwise is probably just a bad parent. It happens.
Like I'm waiting to see Elio because we always have seen the Pixar movie with my kids. So I'm waiting to see Elio until I can get my kids to go to the movie with me.
And I'm telling you, this year I had Father's Day. Neither one of my kids were here. Saddest day ever. Just sad. And then I had to spend it with my mom and dad, who I love. But then they got into a fight over politics, which is the worst kind of day. So it's just like, ugh, this day sucks.
So what you're saying is that Father's Day isn't even worth it to you anymore.
I mean, if they're not going to make the effort, right, John? You know what?
I mean, I get it.
Get a
yeah.
plane ticket. It ain't that far. Can't be you that know, expensive.
I mean, they're grown. They should have grown money to be able to come see you on Father's Day.
To be fair, my kids were literally here 2 weeks ago. So
I was just kidding. When they were literally here 2 weeks ago, you couldn't just move the holiday.
They did. They gave me a card.
Don't give Hallmark any more money. Make the holiday your own.
Oh, they got you a card. Yeah.
They took care of me in some other ways. You know what I mean? They like, you know, did they give me a gift? Yeah, they did. I did. I got some new shoes.
Is that so you can shove your foot up their ass?
All right, moving on. So independent movies occasionally hit that rarefied blockbuster status too. But I got to tell you, it's very, very rare. So I just want to point this out. So I went through, like, I'm trying to look for truly independent movies that became blockbusters. And there aren't that many. There's a few, for sure, but not that many. Sound of Freedom, The Blair Witch Project is probably the best example, right? That was just a phenomenal success. Fahrenheit 9/11, nobody saw a documentary becoming that huge. And I don't know if we'll ever see one that huge again. The Amityville Horror. So it's so rare that original films hit that blockbuster status that it once again feeds the fact that IP is what generates box office dollars. So not original ideas like so many people want to claim. Now, I'm pointing that out because every year you hear this, right? People are sick of remakes, they're sick of sequels, they're sick. We want original movies. But the truth is, if you look at the numbers, the actual tickets sold, that is absolute bullshit. IP sells way more, 10 times, 20 times more than original ideas. What say y'all?
We, the film buffs, we want the original ideas because we've seen
everything. But I go see them. I support them with my dollars. I don't sit there and bitch about it and then not go to the movie and see it when it comes out. I always go to see them. I will hunt down independent movies.
I skipped the How to Train Your Dragon in order to see The Life of Chuck last weekend. It was so good.
Damn it. I'm seeing it tomorrow. I am seeing it tomorrow.
And I wanted to see The Materialists, but I didn't get a chance to go yet. So I have to figure out how to get The Materialists in before it gets out of the theater.
See? That's what we need. We need more of that. Everybody listening, go see an independent movie. But I'm just saying, like, what do you think about that? Every year we hear this, right? I've had, I don't know how many people argue this. If you even say that on, which is, just don't say anything on social media, I think, at this point, because everybody's going to argue with you. But if you say, no, that's, you know, the numbers don't justify what you're saying. No, everybody wants original movies because, you know, Hollywood only makes remakes and sequels. I'm like, that's not true. That's 100% not true. There are original movies that come out almost every single weekend. Do you go to see them? I didn't know that was out. Shh. Okay. Well, that's on you. I know that they're out. I mean, if you're listening to this, I assume you know that they're out. If you're on social media and you're following like a film and television site, I would assume you might know that some of these are coming out. Make a plan to go see them.
Open up the AMC app and scroll once or twice and you'll see a whole bunch of stuff that's out.
But then people will tell me, well, you know, movie tickets have gotten too expensive. No, they haven't. They've only gone up a buck in about 10 to 15 years. They have not, on average, gone up. It's the concessions.
Go on Tuesday and Wednesday for $7.
There you go. You go at a discount right there. A lot of cities, it's only $5, depending on if it's a major city. Yeah. And you've got everybody has an A-list option where you pay $25 and you can see as many as you want in a month. Regal has them. AMC has them. Everybody has some. They all have them now.
I saw two in the same day last weekend.
Man, that sounds tiring.
Yeah, they were only an hour and a half each.
But you could support independent movies. If you really want more original movies, they have to make money. It is a commerce. It is a commerce. I keep seeing so many, and don't get me wrong, I understand artists, they want original content. Amanda Seyfried, she got a lot of press because she said it's not really brave to make sequels and remakes. Maybe not, Amanda, but I mean, they do have to make money in order to continue making movies.
A lot of the movies you mentioned are all movies that somehow managed to break through when it came to the marketing. You know, Amityville Horror, one of the scariest movies of its time, breaks through the marketing because it's one of the scariest movies of its time. Blair Witch Project had that going for it. Plus, there were a lot of people who thought that was something that really happened.
Sure were.
Taking those two examples, those are two movies that the amount of money that goes into marketing other movies is not as big as what happens with word of mouth when those movies start coming out. Word of mouth really starts overtaking what the marketing dollars do, and people start hearing about it. Oh my God, Blair Witch this, Blair Witch that, Blair Witch this. And it becomes something where people end up going to go see it because of just strictly because of word of mouth and because of how they're spending their marketing dollars so much better. I think that's a big thing when it comes to a lot of these indies, is that it has to be big enough or different enough to break through the cacophony of marketing that's out there for all these other movies.
So people tend to claim trends in different areas and whatnot. So, but really many of these eras return. Like people like to say, well, we're in the superhero era, or we're in the action buddy action sequel era, or, you know, we're all in these different areas. We're in the Pixar era, whatever. But really it's not that true. Going through and doing a bunch of research on this, it's really not true. Superhero movies were massive hits in the 80s. Not as many, but they were massive hits. Superman 2 and Batman both took the top summer spot in their respective years. Marvel's been ruling since the 2000s. Spider-Man, X-Men, you know, way back then. Top Gun and Jurassic Park both have massive hits in the 80s and 90s. And also currently, in our current decade, they're massive hits. Star Wars is eternal. Right? They've had so many massive hits. In fact, the number one summer movie since 1975 has been either Marvel, DC, Top Gun, Star Wars, or Jurassic Park related 19 times. So 38% of the time, and that's not the top 10, that's just the number one movie. 38% of the time, it was either Marvel, DC, Top Gun, Star Wars, or Jurassic Park. So please tell me again how much we love original movies.
This much.
His fingers are not very far apart. They're not.
But you can still do individual stories or new stories in those properties.
Now, would you consider that original by some people's standards? I mean, I think IP sells, so why not branch out? Like, Star Wars has done a little bit of that, but they got skittish.
Indiana Jones, like, all those movies are very different, in my opinion. And what they're searching for, the people involved, the bad guys.
Sure.
So yeah, it's indie the entire time for five movies, but at the same time, it's five great movies minus one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. As long as you correct yourself, four great ones.
That one was okay.
So how do we feel about franchises? Are you guys sick of them, or is it you've just relegated to the point where if I don't like it, I just don't go?
I'm very much in that camp. If I'm over it, if I don't like it, I don't go. In a lot of cases, I still love going to go see those movies. I think this is the first time. Oh, actually, the last couple of years have been the first time where I haven't been in like a rush to go see a Marvel movie. Where, you know, that's the only time that I'm really running into franchise fatigue. But I this year I didn't rush to go see the last Mission Impossible, which is, I don't know if that's franchise fatigue or if that I didn't hear enough good things about it to rush to the theater, even though I love that whole series. I don't know. I'm just relegated to, like, I just treat it like any other movie, and I know I'm going to see it eventually. And I don't know if I have to go see them in the theater anymore, unless it's something that I absolutely adore, which I'm making the effort more so to go see stuff in the theater, which is funny.
I love franchises. I don't know why it's supposed to be so negative. Look, all you got to do is not go if you don't enjoy them. It's just what cracks me up is I will tell people, oh, I can't wait to see the new Fast and Furious movie, right? And it's going to be whatever, number 11 or James Bond movie or whatever. And you get that, God, well, aren't you sick of them? Have they made a bunch of them? Like, you will watch, no offense, Troy, Grey's Anatomy for 20 some years, right? What is the difference between you like those characters and you want to see them go through another journey? That's literally all it is. It's the exact same thing. If you go back and watch 10 seasons of a television show or 8 seasons of a television show, that's no different than me going to see a bunch of movies. It's much less in terms of time spent. I've spent so much less time than you have because they're all two and a half hours max. Meanwhile, you're 20 episodes, 10 episodes, whatever the number is, you have invested in this. So why is that any different? I've never understood the argument, because all you have to do is just not go. Why does it make some people so upset that I enjoy seeing the people I love again?
I'm thinking, what, 20 to 25 hours for the Fast and the Furious? You know, that's not even two seasons of Grey's Anatomy.
Right, yeah. Or most network shows.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you do the same thing and just do it at home, you know, and that's your choice. You like what you like. I prefer movies to television shows. Always have.
I think it's different because it takes so much time between each movie, unless they're planning it like, you know, like a Lord of the Rings, right? Peter Jackson just busting them out every year, or Star Wars was like on every other year kind of thing for a little bit. So I think there's just something that movies, maybe it was ingrained in our brain that movies were supposed to be trilogies because of Star Wars. Like when you get to the third, post the third one, you kind of go like, do I really need a fourth? I mean, we said it with Toy Story. Toy Story 4 is a great movie.
I haven't seen it.
I was like, I stood up. I applauded. I was like, this is the greatest shit ever at the end of Toy Story 3. This is like wrapped up perfectly. It's awesome. It's fantastic. And then I'm like, but now we got the Bonnie story. And I'm like, okay, great. We can do three Bonnie movies. I'm okay with that. Toys are, you know, ageless. So why not? Let's do three Bonnie stories. And we're getting Toy Story 5, what, next year, year after? Mm-hmm. So I go back and forth. If you can tell a good story and it's interesting, great. You know, like Force Awakens, sure, it was fun, it was great, but it was a retelling of A New Hope for the most part.
I refuse to engage with you on this conversation.
Why?
It's true.
I don't want to get into the whole like what Star Wars was and all that other stuff. And
yeah, we don't need that again. It's about summer blockbusters.
But there isn't even like, when you think about stories, like you can watch a different movie. The movie itself may look different, but the story is exactly the same. The Matrix and the Lego movie, same story, just told completely differently.
Oh, God, you just either made one better or ruined the other one for me now.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked.
I'm just saying.
All right, let's back to summer blockbusters, because now you're all over the, you know, you got Force Awakens, which I think came out in the winter. You got Matrix, came out in like March or something. Come on, summer. Focus.
We're talking franchises.
I get that. But summer. Back where Mark Harmon does his best work. Summer. Let's do that. See, that's an in-joke. Huh?
That's an in-joke. I like that.
All right. Franchises. Jaws sold t-shirts, books, and a ton of other merchandise. So it was only a couple of years later when another soon-to-be famous director named George Lucas unleashed Star Wars and began selling toys and tie-ins, and famously worked out a deal so he kept the merchandising rights, and he made most of his money from that. Not only merchandise, but marketing tie-ins became normal. Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Grease, Ghostbusters, Roger Rabbit, like Troy talked about. If there's a huge movie in the summer, it had merchandise to sell. It had Happy Meals. They partnered with various cereal brands and snacks and fast food and anything else. Happy Meals. Do you remember anything in particular about especially the merchandise portion? Like when you were a kid, because I don't know how much you really buy into it these days other than the freaking popcorn buckets that need to go away.
I mean, it was the Happy Meals for sure.
For you?
Like, yeah, the movie was coming out and you're like, free toy for whatever is coming out for that movie. Absolutely.
You remember the McDonald's glasses you could buy for the Star Wars and for all the other movies?
Yes. Like there was you get a collection there was of a four or whatever.
Yeah. You can collect all these different McDonald's glasses. I loved those glasses, and it broke my heart when you used them too many times that the design finally washed off of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those were things that I really loved as a kid. As an adult, I think it's interesting that we have the popcorn bucket is such a thing right now. Like the popcorn bucket is what everyone's kind of going nuts over. And I've had interesting experiences watching people buy these popcorn buckets because I'm like, first of all, way too much money. But second of all, I've seen some people get really excited over some of these things. And I wish I got nearly as excited about anything as some of these people did about like the Thunderbolts limousine popcorn bucket.
Yeah. And granted, I'm sure there's five people to get excited about each one of them, but every time I go to my local theater, I just start seeing more of them piling up. Like it's starting to look like a yard sale at some point. They have all these different popcorn buckets and they just keep being there. Like they're not going away. So at some point it's going to be like the ET game. They're gonna have to bury all these things in the desert somewhere. And
oh my God.
And that's the end of them. I don't know.
There's only one I regret not getting, and it's the Dungeons and Dragons one. I should have gotten like five of that one.
if you really wanted it, yeah. I did get a Wolverine one for a buddy, that doesn't go to the theater much. But one thing that I remember as a kid, I had an Ewok set, like the Star Wars Ewok set.
Yeah, from, the Ewok Village.
Yeah, the Village from Return of the Jedi. And I played with that thing crazy. But I also, because one summer they had, like, you had to some box tops or something in and get, you know, you used to be able to do that and get certain exclusive figures, action figures and whatnot. And I had one of Emperor Palpatine that was, come to find out years later, was rare, right? My brother, I believe, accidentally broke it. I don't remember. Or somebody broke it, I believe, in my little toy chest as I became an adult. But that thing was very valuable and never got to reclaim that. But I always loved that because it was kind of cool that, oh, I had something that was kind of valuable for a time, and I got it just because I collected box tops and set them in. I got like 10 cereal boxes or something. And that was kind of fun as a kid because you could, you know, and also cereal boxes where you get like a toy from movies or whatnot, and you just turn the box upside down because you always knew it was at the bottom just so you could get to it faster. I miss those days.
God, things are so much more magical then. Although the whole mailing the box tops off, that I think I did that once. And by the time I got the item, I had forgot all about it.
Oh. Did you enjoy it, though? Or you just threw it away?
It was almost like Christmas. It was actually kind of cool because I'm like, what? There's a package for me? That never happens. A package for me? And it was almost like getting a letter from Hogwarts or something. I know I'm like really that thrilled about the fact that there was something for me. And all of a sudden I open it. I'm like, oh, I remember what this is now. This is so freaking cool.
And then you remember it cost $300 because of how many things you had to buy in order to get enough box stuff.
That's true. Yeah. When you really put the math to it. Yep. It's true.
Well, I was a kid, so it didn't cost me nothing. It cost my parents something, though.
Wow. Oh, look at this fancy guy. Huh? I had to do chores. I didn't just get something. I had to, correct. I had to earn it. For the
box tops of cereal you were already eating?
Man, if I had to buy a stamp, I had to go do something to earn the money to pay for the stamp. Yes.
Damn right.
Yep. We didn't live on a black sand mansion beach, all right? We had to go out and work and mow lawns and
I mowed lawns?
Detassel corn, which I didn't even know was a thing. But it is.
I mowed lawns and I did chores. I did stuff.
I'm sure your maid did. Yep.
No, I did that stuff.
All right. Speaking of summer blockbusters, back on target. Do you have a most disappointed memory of all these summer blockbusters, of all the years you've been going, where like the one that really just disappointed you the most? You had so much excitement. I can tell you mine just to put you in the mood. And it's still to this day, Beverly Hills Cop 3. Will never be anything but Beverly Hills Cop 3 because I absolutely adored both of those first two movies. I worshipped Eddie Murphy. My mom took me to see Raw in concert. Don't judge her. And I just loved everything about him, and I couldn't wait for Beverly Hills Cop 3, and it's one of the worst, not just sequels, but one of the worst movies I've ever seen in a theater. So it was just terrible. And I was so sad as a kid because I'm like, now they'll never make another one because this one did so horrible. And this is the end. And then finally we got Axel F, which made up for it somewhat. But
see, I'm not as big of a hater on Beverly Hills Cop 3 because I worked at a theme park. So I like attached to the theme park part of it. So I thought it was actually kind of cool.
Well, how does it feel to be that wrong? I'm just telling you, because my childhood dreams were crushed in that theater.
Because there was one like, that was worse. Stomped. There's one that was worse than that.
All right. I'm listening. All right.
And that was Independence Day 2.
Oh, that happened as an adult. That wasn't even as a kid for you. Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty disappointing.
Like most summers were like super like, yeah, you know, the we're getting Independence Day 2. This could be freaking awesome. I cannot wait.
He's going to do another speech. Oh, we're going to make it without Will Smith. This is a great idea.
Final Randy Quaid's still alive. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. It's so bad.
John?
I can always just sit there and reframe everything. At least it wasn't Battlefield Earth, where a friend of mine and I were so excited to go see it that we went to go buy the tickets. So we ran to the theater to go get the tickets for our entire friend group to go see it. Then we were like, well, we got time to kill. Let's go see the movie. And so we saw the movie, and we after we walked out of that movie, we went directly to the ticket booth and said, can we exchange these for something else? And there's a Norm Macdonald movie that was out that weekend also that we went and saw instead. And that was a better thing for us to do because everyone was a little upset at us for actually just randomly changing out the movie tickets like we did. But we in the end, we couldn't do that to our friend group.
And the bad movie was?
I said it, Battlefield Earth.
Oh, it's Battlefield Earth. Okay.
God. Such a terrible movie. Terrible like movie.
It's so bad that I'm trying to rack my brain to find the next worst one, but it's just, I can always just go back to saying, well, at least it's not Battlefield Earth.
Fair enough. All right. So how about putting that aside? Disappointment. Let's go back to happy. So give me your favorite summer movie blockbuster memory. Not 5 or 10, John.
What do you mean, John?
Or Troy. Well, either one of you. You both like to drop honorable mentions. Keep it at one.
One time after a hurricane had gone through South Florida, my brother and I were tired of like pulling wood off of our house. So my brother just looks at me and says, "We're going to the movies." And I was like, all right. Because like my brother never liked hanging out with me anyways at the time, because I'm like his little brother. He says, "We're going to the movies today." And I, okay, whatever you say, we're going to go to the movies. He's like, "And I'm buying." I'm like, "Oh, do I have to do anything?" And he's like, "No, I'm buying. Let's go to the movies." So he takes me to go see Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And I just love the fact that at that moment, my brother decided to just take me to go to the movies, which is not something he did with me all that often. Mm. And I like it for the fact that it was Terminator 2. I like it for the fact that I was with my brother. And it was just a great moment. It's something that always sticks out in my head as a good memory.
I mean, if Independence Day 2 was the worst, that only means that Independence Day was the absolute best. I had so much fun with that. We looked so much forward to that. It was like coming in DTS around sound. Like, we're so stoked to go to the theater to see it, just have our asses rumble when those ships came through. And then when the laser beam came down and it blew up everything, you were just like, "Yeah, this is what we do for summer. This is awesome." So good. Welcome to Earth.
I didn't realize that movie hit you so hard.
Dude, Independence Day is great. I love Independence Day.
I do too. I mean, I liked it better when it was called V, but I still like that movie quite a bit. It's totally a V ripoff. I want to throw this out there. It's just nostalgia at this point. Recently, not trying to bum anybody out, but my son's mother passed away. And we actually, our first date was actually at a summer movie. It was Young Guns 2. And so I think right now I'm just kind of stuck on that. So that's going to be mine because I got a kid out of it. And, you know, for nostalgia, I think it's the right thing to do.
But you didn't name your kid Billy?
Wouldn't that be funny? And I'd be like, "I'll make you famous." Or I did make you famous. I named you Billy the Kid. Would the middle name be the Kid?
Sure. Or
would you just like put it down as one, like make it one of those weird names where it's the Kid? But if you really look at it, when he's filling out paperwork, somebody's like, "Wait, is your name Billy the Kid?" "No, it's Thicket." "What? No, it's a weird name. It's Slavic." Or something along those lines. All right. So if you could see any summer blockbuster again for the first time, what would it be? I'm going to tell you what mine is, right? If I could see any summer blockbuster again for the first time, it'd be The Sixth Sense. Because that was a movie that made me go, "Oh!" And that I love that feeling when a movie beats you. You know, and really is just done so well that when you go back, it really plays. Because to get that surprise right and really be effective and really carry over for decades and years and everything else, for that to really happen, you have to make a great movie too. It can't just be the surprise. Like, the whole movie has to work. And the way that that's layered and everything else and laid out, it works beautifully.
And then it was all downhill from there.
I don't know about that.
He's up and down. I mean, say hello to your mother for me. I get it. He's got some mistakes, right? But I will say that The Sixth Sense, it was a mind blower at the time.
It's a tough question. I think sort of in the same vein, it would be something like The Blair Witch. Because that movie is not a movie that you can watch again. And I remember watching it and being engrossed by the fact that sticks or pile of sticks were scary.
That whole movie was scary.
That's kind of funny. Those sticks kind of terrify me, though, man. In the end, when he's like in the corner, I just remember being like, oh my God. And I knew it wasn't real.
Yeah. I mean,
and you walk out kind of ashamed of yourself if you know that, because you're like, man, nothing happened in that freaking movie. Nothing. And I was kind of terrified.
Other than your anxiousness turned up to 11.
Yep.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful storytelling. It's beautiful in the sense that how they used every little movie trick they possibly can.
It wasn't the first movie, but it was the one that popularized that whole genre. Absolutely.
Well, I didn't say that, but I was just saying it was just a beautiful storytelling and the way they did everything. Like, they just scared you, and they did so expertly. So it's and it's not something you can ever sit down and watch again.
I think awe and wonder comes to mind. So I would have to go with Jurassic Park, the very, very, very first one.
I can't fault you for that one. No. Those effects, like, when you finally see dinosaurs on the big screen for the first time.
With the overture music, like your face looks exactly like their faces did.
That
to have that experience again would be amazing.
Yeah. I asked my mom this question because I just saw her. And I'm like, what would you do if you could, because, you know, I used to go to all these movies with her, right, for most of my young life. I'm like, if you could have one, like, summer movie memory back, what would it be? And she said, I'd love to see E.T. with you again. Because when I was a little kid at E.T. And I'm like, why? Did I love E.T. that much? She goes, no, because you said you were going to marry Drew Barrymore. And it was weird. But also extremely sweet because, you know, we were both little kids. And I'm like, yeah, all right. And I got older and I realized, well, marriage is overrated. This is insane. But yeah.
You know what? I think I'm going to adjust my answer briefly.
This is an honorable mention. Is that what we're doing?
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. No,
there we go.
As much as going to the movies with my brother was great, there was so few times in my life where we went to the movies as a family, and there's only two that I can remember, which is for Batman and Gremlins.
Okay.
And only because we went as an entire family for those two movies.
That's back, see, the young kids, they don't know, right? That's back when you had to wait in line.
Yeah.
You had to wait in line. And if it was at a mall, God forbid, the line for Batman, I remember that line like it was yesterday because it was around the mall. Like, the whole mall, kids, that line was. And you had to wait and you hoped you got in. Otherwise, it was the next show.
Those are the days, man.
I love those lines. I still love waiting in lines like that.
I would like waiting in lines like that, but...
I'm like
the camaraderie that lines provide. Yes.
All right, fine. But I love those lines. I do. Anything more you guys want to talk about in terms of summer blockbusters?
I mean, just closing up on Jaws maybe a little bit.
Okay, let's bookend it. Let's go.
Yeah, the cool thing about Jaws...
shit. So, no, don't do this. You just fell into his trap.
The cool thing about Jaws...
We're just going to drift for a little bit.
...is that that movie, at the time that it came out...
Don't sink this. Don't do it.
Don't fish hook us.
This is going to bite.
Just stop. The thing that Jaws did at the time that it came out in 1975... was that it gave you this sense of like summer swimming fear kind of thing, right? It was like the surface level stuff.
Dunna.
But when you go below the surface, what it really was actually like, it was the thing was trying to portray like all of the uneasiness, uncertainty, the unknown that was happening in the 70s. Like, you're coming off of the gas crisis. Like, is there going to be another gas crisis? Are we going to go into another Great Depression? We're going into the Cold War. Like, is there going to be nuclear war? Are my neighbors across the street communists? So that it was like Spielberg was actually making a statement of all of this underlying fear with that movie that I think people don't realize was happening at the time. Like, you go back and now like study it now, like in a film school and whatnot, you can pick out some of those things. But I just don't think people got it initially. They thought it was just literally a shark movie. But there was a lot of undertone stuff underneath there about like what lies below the surface that we don't see in the 70s.
I can't tell if we ruined his joke so bad that he just like had to complete the whole line.
Yeah, I think he just made all that up, by the way. Yeah, I don't even think any of that's true. There wasn't a Cold War.
It was definitely a Cold War.
Propagandist.
In the 70s.
Wasn't any Cold War. It was about a shark, man. That's what it was about. Chomp, chomp, chomp.
That's the blockbuster side of it, but there's also art underneath.
Yeah, broken ass art. Oh my god, there's a documentary. I think it's on HBO. They have one. There's another one coming out, but I've always find that fascinating to watch. Just everything that went wrong in that.
Everything that went wrong.
And there's also the long lost shot of when little Alex. There's actually a shot of Jaws and Alex like kind of being eaten to a degree that they didn't put in the movie that you can find out there. I don't know how true or not true that is. It seems like it's true, like they did film it, but I'm glad they didn't do it. I think there's something about the kid just vanishing that's more terrifying than anything, because it's like nobody knows that you've been eaten. It's terrible way to go. Terrible. Just terrible. Hey, well, our show is independently fun, and therefore all the expenses are from our own pockets. If Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast, once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. We're going to have a bad movie night coming out there soon. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. Now we've got some upcoming attractions. Troy, what's coming to theaters while we're off for 2 weeks? Just to remind everybody.
That's right, because we're telling you what's coming out next weekend, because we already told you what came out this weekend, last weekend. So just go back and listen to last week's podcast if you want to know what to go see this weekend. But next weekend, Apple's hitting the theater because they are just touting F1. That's right, a Formula One driver comes out of retirement to compete alongside a rookie driver and the Titans of the sport. Brad Pitt stars in that one, so be sure to check that one out before it hits your Apple TV Plus subscription. And if you haven't been going to the theaters lately, you'll know that Megan's telling you that you need to silence your phone and pay attention to her, because Megan 2.0 is coming out next weekend. After 2 years after Megan, who was a Marvel official intelligence, that's right, Ron Burgundy, that shit, a marvel of artificial intelligence, went rogue and embarked on a murderous and impeccably choreographed rampage and was subsequently destroyed. Megan's creator, Gemma, has become a high-profile author and advocate for government oversight of AI. Meanwhile, Gemma's niece, Katie, now 14, has become a teenager rebelling against Gemma's overprotective rules. Unbeknownst to them, the underlying tech for Megan has been stolen and misused by a defense contractor. And voila, Megan is resurrected. So go check that out. She's faster, stronger, more lethal. And it should be fun as we talk about AI in the world today.
And they've really, I got to say, they really have embraced the absurdist of that, right, for the sequel. They're just going full tilt nonsense. Full tilt.
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't gotten hit with Megan in the pre-show role, like, see one of those before you go see Megan next weekend. And then, of course, for the 4th of July, the only movie we need to worry about is, of course, Jurassic World Rebirth. 5 years after the events of Jurassic World Dominion, the planet's ecology has proven largely inhospitable to dinosaurs. Those remaining exist in an isolated equatorial environment where the climates resemble that which they once thrived in. This has ScarJo in it, so make sure you go check that out. It's going to be fun. Tropical biosphere. There's a drug that's going to hold the key to bringing life-saving benefits to humankind if they can survive not getting eaten first.
Mm-mm-mm. How exciting is it for you to have Jurassic World Rebirth? I guess I don't know where everybody is on this one. We haven't really talked about this one much. I know it'll be a huge hit because dinosaurs always are, but
I think this would be a great movie if they would have kept it for another 5 years.
You think it's too soon?
It's too soon because it's a whole new cast. If it's the same cast, different story. All new cast, hold it for a little bit.
Hmm.
My opinion.
I like Scarlett Johansson.
I love her being in this. It's going to be great.
Yeah. All right. Streaming. June 27th, Squid Game's going to come for Netflix for season 3 for the final season. Then you've got Smoke, which is Apple TV Plus with starring Taron Egerton as like a fire inspector. So I'm sure it'll be good. Apple TV, Troy's favorite streaming service. Then on July 2nd on Paramount Plus, Dora and the Search for El Dorado. The world's greatest explorer and her friends will trek through the perilous dangers of the Amazonian jungle in search of the ancient treasure of El Dorado to prevent it from falling into enemy hands. Only it won't have the last Dora. It'll have a new Dora. Heads of State on Prime. The UK Prime Minister Idris Elba and US President John Cena. Okay. US President John Cena. It's hard to say with a straight face. Have a public rivalry that risks their country's alliance. But when they become targets of a powerful enemy, they're forced to rely on each other as they go on a wild multinational run. Allied with Noel, a brilliant MI6 agent who's played by Priyanka Chopra Jonas, they must find a way to thwart a conspiracy that threatens the free world. So it's Idris Elba and John Cena in a buddy action flick. And I make jokes, but they do like make John Cena kind of a action hero who becomes president, which seems pretty fitting. This looked very fun from the trailer. Then The Old Guard 2 is on Netflix. That's a sequel to the 2020 action hit The Old Guard with Charlize Theron. And then, like we talked about, on July 10th on Hulu, why you have this like a month after the 50th anniversary, I don't understand, or a few weeks after that. But Jaws at 50, the definitive inside story, is the authorized documentary celebrating the film that redefined Hollywood 50 years after its premiere. Again, it's on Hulu. But it comes The anniversary is like the 20th of June, and this is coming out July 10th. They had 50 years to prepare for this, right? So it could have been on time. That's all I'm saying. All right. And that's it, unless there's anything you guys want to talk about.
Just like I mentioned, I saw Life of Chuck. Go see it.
Yeah, tell us about Life of Chuck.
Life of Chuck is a story about a boy who goes through life, actually living most of it with his grandparents. And as he goes along, learns life lessons along the way. The difference with this movie, though, is that it's told in reverse. So you start actually at the end of his life and work backwards to the beginning. It's fascinating. You'll understand it when you see it. It works totally well.
Okay. Well, I'm seeing it tomorrow. So I'm definitely going to go. And that's Stephen King's story, and Mike Flanagan directed, right?
Yeah. And in this case, it's Stephen King as Richard Bachman. So think like this is more in the vein of like Hearts in Atlantis or Green Mile or Shawshank. It's not the scary Stephen King. It's the more heartfelt Stephen King.
And if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give that one?
I didn't cry at it. I thought there was a lot of hype built up about it. There was going to be like this like emotional, moving, powerful thing. And I never got to that point of like, oh my God, kind of feeling, you know? So I'd say, because the opening, the way it starts is until you figure out like what's going on, it's a little bit weird and a little bit jarring initially. So I'd give it a 7.
Okay.
But once it gets going, it could go to a 750. But like, because of the way the opening starts out and you're just like, I thought this was about Chuck. Where the hell's Chuck? For like a good 10, 15 minutes of the movie, you're like, where the hell's Chuck? So okay. For that, I'd give it a 7.
And John, How to Train Your Dragon, I had my full review last week, but you're a big fan of the film series. Is there anything you want to add to that?
I really had a lot of times where I got choked up. I got into my feelings about it, and I thought it was just beautifully done. So they did a really great job as far as doing this adaptation, and as it should, because Dean Dublas was involved in both the creation and in this.
Now, what do you give this one score-wise?
It's a 750.
Oh, really? I felt like you were higher on this one.
Well, I mean, I know love the series it. It's too not, well. I know the series too well, and I love it very much, but it's, I wouldn't trust me giving it a 9 or a 10 because it's not fair.
It's also the remake. You give the original like a 9. You give this
one I'd give the original a nine for sure.
Okay. Now, I have a question for somebody who didn't see the animated movies. The second and third ones, are they as strong, or is it like diminished returns as they go?
No, they're equally as strong when it comes to emotion, and even more so.
Okay.
Two's a little bit of a dip, but 3 is really great.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's it. Guys, we're going to take a couple weeks off here and actually have some summer break for us. We'll probably have an Inspired drop in the feed or compilation next week, so there'll be something, and then July 4th, there'll be nothing. But I just want to thank everybody for supporting the show as you have forever. Or however long you've been here, and I appreciate it, and I hope you'll still be here when we come back, and maybe Amanda will be here. We don't know. You just never know with her anymore.
She just doesn't know how to work the internet.
It's really a problem. Yep. All right, so if $10 is the full price of it, what am I saying? I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. No, that's the end.
I rate this podcast a solid 50. 5-0.
Oh, okay, I'm going to go watch Jaws. So everybody remember, the next time you head to a theater or stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn. And I want to shout out to Kyle Nolan, who hooked me up with a 4K version of Jaws. It's going to look amazing. Thank you, Kyle. Take care, everybody.